So since I'm the first speaker in the cluster session, and since this is such a diverse audience, I have to make an introduction to the clusters. This is a cluster at a redshift 0.3. This is the name of the cluster. Now, okay. So this is 10 to the 24 centimeters. This is the cluster is this collection of yellowish-looking galaxies. But the galaxies are actually only a minor contribution to the total mass of the cluster. It's 1 to 5% total. The total mass we know from, for example, from gravitational lensing. These are contours of the projected total mass. And it's dominated by dark matter. About 85% is dark matter. You can see that there are two clumps of dark, two subclusters here and here, coincident with the subclusters, with the clumps in the galaxy distribution. In X-rays, we see another component, which is the dominant baryonic component. It's the hot intergalactic gas, which fuels the gravitational potential of the dark matter. And these are the parameters. Typically, the density is a few 10 to the minus 3 particles per centimeter cube. The temperatures are 10 to the 7, 10 to the 8 Kelvin. The X-ray emission comes from the thermal bremsstrahlung. It's optically thin. We see we measure the X-ray brightness is proportional to the density square integrated along the line of sight. We also from the X-rays we also can measure temperatures in each point just from the extracting the spectra. The cluster gas is has a magnetic field of order 1 microgauss plus minus order of magnitude from place to place. And relevant for this meeting is that the beta parameter, the ratio of thermal to magnetic energy, is very hot, is very high, of order several hundreds. So the cluster is, the plasma is hot in terms of the plasma physics. And another minor contributor to the energy and mass balance of the clusters is relativistic particle population. Many emerging clusters exhibit faint radio halos, which are believed to come from the radio synchrotron from relativistic electrons with gammas of order 10 to the 4th, again, plus minus order of magnitude, depending on the frequency of observation. Clusters form by merging collisions and mergers of smaller clusters, gravitational attraction. So this is a real the sequence of events depicting real clusters at different stages. These clusters are about to collide, 5 megaparsec between them. This is a cluster in the middle of collision, a very messy event. And this, after a few billion years, if you leave the cluster alone, it becomes relaxed and nice and elliptical. These mergers are the most energetic events since the Big Bang. The energy, kinetic energy carried by the subclusters is up to 10 to the 63, 10 to the 64 ergs. So of course, it's not released in a second. It's released in a course of a few giga years of this merger. And while it is being released, the clusters are stirred up. There are shock fronts. There are cold fronts, which I'm going to talk about later. There are all kinds of gas dynamic instabilities. There's turbulence. Somebody's sending messages. I'll leave it here so it doesn't interfere. Anyway, so because the gas is so stirred up during a merger, it lets us see all these processes and study the hydrodynamic properties of the gas. And also study the ultra-relativistic particle acceleration. We see the dynamic effects of magnetic fields, and also see the dark matter effects. I'm not going to talk about this. I'm going to talk about what we can learn about the physics of the gas in the clusters from shocks and from cold fronts. So the poster merger shock fronts is the first part. And by the way, I should mention that in the centers, in the cool cores of clusters, there are also this is another branch of cluster science. I'm not going to even touch that thing. There are also AGN explosions blowing up bubbles. Bubbles produce shock fronts there. The shocks there are completely different origin, and they're usually weak. I'm not going to talk about that. There are better people to talk about that. So this is the poster example, the textbook example of a shock. Again, the cluster that I showed in the beginning, Chandra X-ray image. If this is the X-ray brightness. And so you can see, just by looking at this image, you can see that there's some kind of a gas bullet flying in this direction, and there is a shock front right here in front of it. And if I overlay a temperature map, now colors are temperatures. This is cool, this is hot. And contours show the X-ray brightness from the previous plot. You can see that the bullet is cool, that there's all kinds of mess behind it, and the shock region here is hot, as it should be. And if I overlay now the dark matter contours on the X-ray image, you can see that this makes it clear what happens here. The subcluster just flew through one another, and this bullet, this cold bullet, obviously was a cool core of this small subcluster. The subcluster is flying in this direction and is now dragging this bullet along, and the bullet is pushed back by ground pressure, obviously. And here's the shock in front of it. Now let me show X-ray brightness profile and X-ray temperature profile in a sector from the bullet through this shock, across this shock, just to show that we can derive the trivial things correctly from the X-ray data. So this is the X-ray brightness profile. This is the bullet boundary, and this is that shock boundary, and that is the pre-shock gas. So this is the shock. And if I fit it with a simple density model where the density inside is a power law, the density outside is a power law, and then there's a sharp jump through between them, project it on the sky in a spherical geometry, and this is the model. This, the red line here, fits perfectly, and the density jump is a factor of 3 at the shock. From Rankine-Hugoniak jump conditions, this gives a Mach number of 3, plus minus of 4. And here's the temperature profile. You can also see that the temperature, as already shown in the temperature map, temperature jumps at the shock, and from the Rankine-Hugoniak idea, but this jump again is consistent with this Mach number. And this consistency between these two, I'm actually going to use for it's 9 keV. This cluster is the hottest cluster, you know, 17 keV average. It's very massive. And then the bullet is 7 keV. So shocks, such shocks are rare. We only know 2 unambiguous examples. This is another one, Abel 520. Here's this shock. This shock is Mach 2. I'm not going to, this is a data set we didn't analyze yet. I'm going to skip this. And there are a few other candidate shock fronts, maybe 2, which are more or less unambiguous, but the rest is, these phenomena are very rare. So this is pretty much it. So what kind of physics we can learn from the shocks? And one is we can study electron-ion non-equilibrium. And in a kind of a naive picture, at shocks, we know that protons are heated dissipatively, but electrons are heated compressed adiabatically and then reach equilibrium, equilibrate with protons on the time scales of tau EP. Whatever is the physical nature, it can be a collisional equilibration or something else. That's the question we can study. And this is a simulation by Takizawa 1999 of a temperature map of an emerging cluster. 2 subclusters flew through each other. This picture shows the average temperature, the true gas dynamic temperature. And you can see that there are 2 shocks. One of them is an analog of our bullet cluster shock. But if you look at the electron temperature, which is the thing that we measure from the X-rays, that's electron temperature, you don't see the shocks very clearly because electrons are, this, by the way, is simulation is done under the assumption that this time scale is due to Coulomb collisions. So the clusters have such density, gas density, such gas temperatures, and such linear sizes that this collisional time scale is big enough. We can actually see the effect on the cluster scales, and we can do this. We can try to see this for that shock in the bullet cluster. And this is the model prediction for a temperature profile, for a 3D temperature profile, in 2 assumptions. One is that the electron-proton equilibration time is Coulomb collisions, and here's the pre-shock temperature. Then the electrons heat compress adiabatically, and then whereas the protons heat dissipatively to something like this, and then they equilibrate. And from the density profile, from the density jump, we can predict what the temperature of the protons should be, because we are lucky that the shocks are not very strong and the density is not yet a factor of 4, the density jump. From the density jump, we can determine the temperature jump. And also we also know the velocity, the linear velocity of the shock, because we know the sound speed here and the Mach number. So the electrons, as the gas flows from the shock, the time dependence of the electron temperature is projected onto the x-axis. And we are lucky enough that this linear scale is 20 arc seconds, 30 arc seconds, which is perfectly resolvable by Chandra, perfectly well observed by Chandra. And if in another model, if the electrons equilibrate right there at the shock, much quicker than the Coulomb time scale, this is what we will see. And this is what we actually see. Error bars are big, so it's only 95% confidence result. But I mean, this is the only example. The second example will be Abel 520 maybe later. At 95% confidence, we can say that electron proton equilibration is faster than Coulomb by a factor of a few, at least. Now, there may be other explanations. For example, what if there's some kind of plasma process that heats electrons to the right temperature right at the shock? But I have a slide later. I'm going to skip it. In the solar system, we see that it's not the case. In the solar system, the electrons are not heated at the shock, where they are directly observed. I don't know how comparable physically those two kinds of shocks in the solar system and the clusters. But if they are comparable, these two pieces of evidence suggest that this is what happens. And as far as I know, this is the first such direct test in any astrophysical plasmas, not only in cluster plasmas. Somebody tells me that you disagree strongly. Okay. I have to talk to you because, you know, I only do clusters. It's we think that clusters are the biggest, the greatest, everything is the first. So I'm sorry. Anyway, physics from shocks number 2, particle acceleration. We can directly observe particle acceleration. This is Abel 521, a messy cluster, a poor statistics image, Chandra image. Don't see anything particular here, until you overlay a radio image, a 1.4 gigahertz VLA image, and you see this relic here, and lots of point sources. Now, if you go back, now that you know where to look, you see this subtle brightness feature in the X-ray, the X-ray image. No. You don't. Well, you have to use your imagination. I will show a more quantitative measure of this. Anyway, in a lower frequency, this thing becomes wider, and at still lower frequency, which the slide I don't have, but it was published in Nature by Brunetti and Giacchino. It becomes even wider, and then there's a radio halo lights up at 240 megahertz, very low frequencies. It was the first radio halo discovered at low frequencies. So this is a shock front. This is a subcluster that flew through, and there's a flow of gas from here, and that's the shock front between this flow of gas and the main cluster. And we see this, we interpret this as accelerating acceleration of electrons at this shock. And now if we compare the radio spectrum of this relic, those people actually have 5 points and 1 upper limit or lower limit, I don't remember. It fits perfectly with this, with the power law. From the power law, simple Fermi acceleration gives a shock with the Mach of 2.3. Now these data points are brightness profile in that X-ray image. You can kind of see, well, it's low significance, low statistical significance, but you can kind of see that edge. And if you overplot the Mach 2.3 brightness profile, it fits perfectly well. So the X-ray brightness profile of that shock, we don't know exactly if it is shock or not because we don't have the temperature data yet, agrees with the Mach number predicted by the spectrum of the relic. So it's interestingly enough, the common wisdom has been, as far as I know, that low Mach shocks are inefficient accelerators. But here we are, and we see the relic right there. I have to say that Abel 520, another cluster with a shock of 2.1, also has an edge of the radio halo right there at the shock. So presumably it's the same kind of mechanism. And the bullet cluster with the shock of with the Mach 3, that radio halo is a very poor quality. It's an Australian telescope with a low resolution. It also has an edge, which coincides also with the shock. So this seems to be a common occurrence. Now, cold fronts. Cold fronts is a much more common occurrence in emerging clusters. We see them, whereas we only have two ambiguous examples of shocks. Brightness edges like this, or like this, is a very common occurrence. Every other merger has it. So, for example, if we look at the temperature map of this wonderful elliptical galaxy, we see that the gas inside the shock, inside this cold front is cool, the gas outside is hot, and if you multiply temperature by density, you see that it's pretty much in pressure equilibrium. So these are contact discontinuities where the subcluster, dense cool subcluster flies through hot ambient gas. The outer gas of the subcluster is stripped, and this is the contact discontinuity. There are several things that we can learn from these very common things. One thing that immediately obvious is that the edges are very sharp. In fact, if we plot a brightness profile across this edge, this is Abel 3667, the best studied one. The sharpness is actually the width of the front is actually smaller than the Coulomb mean free path in this plasma. Coulomb mean free path is 10 to 15 kiloparsec for the diffusion from here to here. And the upper limit on the width is 4 kiloparsecs. So immediately we can say that diffusion across this front is suppressed. And also the same can be said about the temperature, about the thermal conduction, because the temperature jumps are also as sharp as this. So diffusion and conduction is suppressed. We can say it is suppressed across these features. Now, because I'm going to be chased away from the stage, I'm not going to show you that also in the bulk of the gas, the conduction is suppressed. Second thing, viscosity. Second thing that you notice when you look at these features is that they're very regular. Like, this is the bullet. This is the zoom into the bullet, which is also a cold front. There is a flow of gas here which changes direction. So presumably there should be turbulence in this region. And we don't see this turbulence. I mean, we don't see this turbulence to the extent that we resolve it. So if the turbulence is not there, Rayleigh's number is less than 10 of order, which means that in a simple picture where there's viscosity and there are collisions between particles, then the mean free path of the particles that create viscosity should be greater than a few kiloparsecs. And just by coincidence or by not a coincidence, the Spitzer mean free path for the ions here is about the same order of magnitude. So this is a collisionless plasma, and yet viscosity might be of order collisional viscosity, even though the physical nature of this viscosity is obviously completely different. Now, we have a postdoc at the CFA, John Zuhon, who's actually simulating, not doing this hand-waving arguments, but simulating the mergers, simulating the appearance of the cold fronts in the cool cores of clusters. And his simulations have very high resolution, so numeric viscosity in simulations is very low. And cold fronts do not survive. As soon as they form, they are disrupted by instabilities. And when he turns on the viscosity of water Spitzer, immediately the simulations start looking like the real cluster. So we're going to do a more quantitative study, but it looks like indeed the simulations support this conclusion. Again, the physical nature of this stability is obviously completely unrelated to collisions. It's probably a formation of the magnetic sheet, magnetic layer here with parallel magnetic fields, which provides tension, surface tension. But the practical effect is such that the practical effect is similar to a Spitzer viscosity. Now, there's an upper limit on the viscosity coming from the fact that we need turbulence to create radio halos. So the turbulence is not completely suppressed. There should be turbulence elsewhere. Okay, 20 minutes. Summary. X-ray observations of cluster shock fronts and cold fronts offer interesting tests of properties. The one test is the measure of electron-proton equilibration time scale. It's less than Coulomb at 95% confidence, less than Coulomb time scale by a factor of several. Second thing from the shocks is that we directly see relativistic plasma acceleration, relativistic particle acceleration, even at moderately weak shocks. And the second part is that there are cold fronts which are sharp and stable, and the first thing tells us that the diffusion and thermal conductions are suppressed across the shock, across the front cold fronts, and the stability tells us that viscosity is probably as high as Spitzer. Viscosity, or viscosity in quotes, I don't know. Is viscosity the right word? Yes.
Two questions and a comment, basically. So the first thing is, you can very easily explain, as you already hinted at, the sharpness and stability of cold fronts by this magnetic draping effect, where you trade magnetic fields and you basically suppress the cross-field transport coefficients by a large number, exactly.
Like, yeah.
Exactly. Like and that basically, that way you I guess the viscosity, that provides effective viscosity without sort of having a true sort of Spitzer viscosity in the
that, that's the first thing that physical explanations.
And
that
comes the other one, radio halos that do not need to be actually made through reaccelerated electrons through turbulence. Secondary electrons are equally likely to actually generate radio halos, and you can easily explain the population or sort of the scaling of the radio luminosity, the X-ray luminosity by this model, if you basically postulate, and it's something that we have to show, that the magnetic field is highly amplified through a merger and sort of it's stretched and so on.
That's so this, yeah, there are two schools of thought. One is this, the other one is Brunetti et al. I mean, I'm you know, I want to see this battle.
And one last question is, regarding this 95% confidence level, did you include the systematics due to the model uncertainty of the projection error in this number?
Projection, we were lucky enough that the cluster merger proceeds in the plane of the sky. It's very symmetric. And the shock has a high enough contrast, so that systematics are very small. There's a calibration uncertainty because the temperatures are so high, and Chandra cannot measure those temperatures very accurately. So that error has not been, the calibration error has not been included. So there's probably going to be slightly bigger. The errors are probably going to be slightly bigger when I include that uncertainty. But it's still, I checked that when you use a different calibration, the effect is still there. So it's not going anywhere.
Hi, could you remind us what were the Mach number for the shock that where you measured the electron ion?
Three.
And you don't see any non-thermal emission from there, right?
We can't say because it's non-thermal emission is there. Yes, there's a synchrotron halo.
But on the shock that
on the
it
shock,
seemed like the radio halo was in a different.
The radio
shock,
halo yeah. extends all the way to the shock.
Ah. Okay.
But we can't. The resolution of the radio map is very poor. Unfortunately, it's a southern cluster. It's not seen from TMRT or VLA. So the radio halo is not very well resolved.
Okay.
But it looks like it extends to the shock. So it will be some. There will be some non-thermal emission.
Could you show the slide that you skipped on the heliospheric electron-ion converter?
Okay. Here. I don't know, again, there are people from the solar system studies. I don't know how typical is this Earth-Bauer shock, but that was in one of the textbooks I saw this picture. So this is electron temperature and proton temperature, electron build. This is a Mach 2. Beta for this particular shock was slightly higher than 1, but something like 1.5. Protons go up, electrons stay down, and on the time, well beyond the shock surface, beyond the shock layer, they stay different, whereas the electron and proton densities and components parallel and perpendicular to the magnetic field all are consistent.
A couple of observational questions. First, the temperature profiles you showed for the bullet cluster, were those from Chandra data?
Yes.
How can you measure 30 keV with Chandra?
It's difficult, yes. There's a big uncertainty, which is why the uncertainty is shown here. That's you cannot put an upper limit. This is infinity. So essentially, this point here should say that the temperature is above 23 or so. This is a redshift 0.3 cluster, so which helps a little bit. You divide it by 1.3. But yes.
Okay,
well,
yes,
there's no choice, unfortunately. That's the cluster which we have to work with.
It's probably not bright enough for an instrument that goes to higher energies. But those, I mean, as you know, it might even be possible that the statistical uncertainties are underestimate the true uncertainties. But another question: where does the magnetic field estimate come from? Does that come from just assuming equipartition in a radio halo?
The estimates, there are several. One estimate comes from the equipartition in the radio halo. So other measurements come from Faraday rotation of background extended radio sources.
Okay.
Other estimates come from the comparison of the absence of the hard X-ray inverse Compton emission and the presence of the synchrotron emission. The fourth. There's a number. There's n different methods to measure magnetic fields. I'm actually going to propose even another one. But it's really they're all indirect. They're all uncertain to a factor of plus minus 3, and they are discrepant by order of magnitude. So, but it's around 1 microgauss.
I think Mishu is.
Regarding this weak shock that presumably accelerates electrons efficiently, I think it's the shock of Mach.
2.3, yes.
Yeah, and is any estimate as to how magnetic field is locally oriented? I mean,
In the shocks.
Yeah.
In the shocks. No, there are no data with such resolution, such angular resolution, to say how it's oriented in the shocks. If we were lucky enough, and there was some kind of an extended radio galaxy far away, just behind the shock, but we are not so lucky. There's nothing. Well, it's 2.256. It's a question whether or not there's a shock or something else. Second. Actually, I just recalled that there are measurements in the solar system shocks, and I'm pretty sure you know about all those measurements. And at least one that I saw was that in orientation is not actually as you would naively imagine, that magnetic field is tangled and random in front of the shock, and then shock compresses it becomes stretched in this direction. It's not like this. It's still tangled and random. At least in that shock, it was like this. So there's something going on at the shock surface, which deviates from this simple picture where you were just compressed the plasma in one direction and suddenly the magnetic fields.
So it's interesting to see what you've been doing with the clusters, because when you're looking at shocks 4,700 kilometer per second, with only a Mach number of 2 and finding that there seems to be prompt equilibration at the shock front of the temperatures, this is in contrast to what you see in supernova remnants, because there you see for that kind of shock speed, the ratio of the temperatures is almost mass proportional heating. And so what the big difference there seems to be with the remnants, the Mach numbers are a lot higher.
Yeah, Mach
numbers are higher. And so it seems like you can actually, so it's the Mach number that's the determinant of this equilibration that suggests rather than simply the shock speed. And I think it's a very interesting new area of parameter space that you're looking at.
Yeah.
But by the way, I'm sorry for the earlier outburst. I just meant to say that we've been measuring equilibration in supernova remnants and partially neutral gas through the H-alpha line profiles, the Balmer-dominated remnants. You can measure the equilibration there, and we've got it for a range of shock speeds.
Well,
interesting to see how.
My point was actually that in supernova remnants, you have to go to great pains to determine the Mach number, whereas in this case we simply just measure the density jump, which is directly measurable. It's perfectly optically thin, and it's only a factor of 3. We don't go close to 4, where you get uncertain Mach number.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're
4
right.
Or whatever, 7.
Yeah, we often can't see emission from ahead of the shock to actually determine what the pre-shock temperature is, but the supernova.
one of them.